Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. I am Jamie, as always, with John. What is up?
Dude, like, I'm just so excited for today. We've been wanting to do this case for years.
We have a common friend. We're going to talk about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy today and next week. And, I mean, honestly, we could make it several months, but we're going to consolidate it into two episodes. We have a friend who's just fascinated with all things assassination. And when I ask him about this,
that's not creepy at all, right?
Well, I mean, we've talked about murder for roughly 500 hours into a microphone. I don't think it's any creepier than that.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
He doesn't seem to think anything's up here. So I'll be interested to get him to listen to this and see if we agree or not with him. First, I got a couple reviews to read. This one came in over on Spotify, which you can now add reviews and comments to episodes. This is from Ashley Cottle. It says, just discovered you guys. Love the show. I'm in Kentucky and wondered if you had covered the murder of Alex Johnson in Lexington. I have never heard of an Alex Johnson case, but we will add it to the list.
No, we have a running list. We've marked several off the last couple of months. So yeah, we can add that one too.
This review came in over on Facebook. This was from Scrappy Forcier. Is okay. How I'm going to pronounce that.
Or CA French.
They do good research and pay more attention to remembering the victims. So thank you, Scrappy. We appreciate you listening to the show and taking time to review us over on social media. That is the best thing you can do to help us out.
Yeah, I want to say thank you to a couple of folks that joined us on Patreon. First, we have Jill, who joined last week. Jill joined the $3 a month level, but took advantage of the 15% discount when you join an annual membership. So it's like $30 one time a year and you get a whole year's worth of content. So thank you, Jill. And then we have Lori, who came in. Looks like Lori's payment is like pending, not sure which level. So, but I'm sure Lori will figure it out. And thank you, Lori.
We appreciate all the support over there and ratings and reviews. More than anything, thanks for listening. If we didn't have people listen to this, then it would be even more awkward talking about murder into a microphone and nobody hearing it.
Yeah, we release a brand new, like, exclusive episode on the first of every month, and we release early ad-free content from our main feed, and, like, I feel like the infomercial, and that's not all. No, we also have been working on some fictional podcasts. Left on Dead Season 2 will be coming out in the upcoming months.
Script's done.
And we will release that early to Patreon members so they can give us feedback and be part of the process.
Yeah, we really do love that. And the feedback for season one was super helpful in helping us to improve it and get it ready for the more wide release.
We did that for Paradigm as well. And yeah, just we've got quite a community over there, over 150 folks over there. And there's a chat feature now so people can send us messages and we can respond on the fly. I love it over there.
Yep. Love to chat with you over there after we get done chatting about President John F. Kennedy. John, why don't you get us rolling?
Yeah, man. I mean, I guess first off, if you're an American, like I feel like every American knows the story of John F. Kennedy. And unfortunately, it was something that was on live television. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, the world was able to watch this happen. This was, it took place in Dallas, Texas, and my wife has family in that area. So I've visited the museum they have there now. I've walked on the grassy knoll where people were standing when the parade was going through. It's tragic.
And if you think about that time in our history, that's at the time we're getting into the space race. It's in the middle of the Cold War. We're in the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like, this is such a big buildup in a time in our history. And then the leader of our country was murdered out in public for everybody to see. Not like Abraham Lincoln in a show, which we'll talk more about some other presidential assassinations later on. But yeah, this was a different avenue of attacking our president than we had seen before. And today we're going to go through kind of the details of what we know happened. We'll get into some, ideas of what may have happened, but we're going to spend most of next week talking about theories of how different people may or may not have been involved here.
The rare two-parter from True Crime Cast. I also want to say, like, you and I were young adults when 9/11 happened, and I remember everything about that day. And I bet that this assassination of John F. Kennedy has a similar feel for people who were alive at that time. Like, I'm sure that you remember where you were when you heard about John F. Kennedy getting murdered. And yeah,
and we've
huge
had,
moment in America.
We've had several assassinations of our presidents, a few other attempts that didn't work out, but this was the last one. It hasn't happened in our lifetime yet. Hopefully it doesn't. But yeah, it's the last historical presidential assassination.
So a recent Gallup poll shows that 62% of Americans today believe that President John F. Kennedy was killed as the result of an assassin conspiracy. Now, to be clear, I would say 100% of the people believe that he was killed. Over half of the people believe that this was like a conspiracy.
Well, there is a small group of people that don't think he's killed. We'll talk about that at another time, and it's not even on the page of rational thoughts. But yes, it's basically the decision of...
That's under the flat earth section of this podcast.
It really is. Did the person who we know was arrested for this, was he the one that fired the fatal shot? And was he acting alone? Was he the lone gunman, which is the prevalent theory that I guess those other 48% of people believe?
Yeah, you're right. So the 62% basically reject the official lone gunman theory that we were all taught about in school. And people spend their entire careers on this subject. In Paul Brandis's 2023 book, Countdown to Dallas, he estimates that roughly 40,000 books have been published on the untimely death of JFK. So let's dive in, man. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, it starts with a trip to Texas on November 21st, 1963. President John F. Kennedy, who we'll probably refer to as JFK for most of the episode, went by Jack to those close to him. So he was considered Jack, and his wife was called Jackie, Jacqueline Kennedy, along with Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, and his wife's name was Lady Bird. But they all went on a 2-day, 5-city fundraising trip to Texas, preparing for the next election. Kennedy was going to be up for re-election, and this was a way for him to win over the crucial state of Texas. This was a really, it's always a trying time socially for our country, but at this time in particular, we're still dealing with segregation issues, and the state of Texas is largely more conservative than Kennedy was, even the Democrats, because they considered Kennedy to be a little bit too liberal for their tastes, which is part of why Johnson was his running mate the first time, because Johnson was a Texan and people loved him. And even though many Texans disliked JFK, they welcomed him. They lined up. You can see on all the videos that people lined up for this tour. People came out to meet him. Whether or not they like him, I feel like people are going to come out and at least be able to say, I saw the president. They went to San Antonio and then Houston and then Fort Worth, where they spent the night on the night of November 21st.
The next morning, November 22nd, 1963, the president made a speech in the parking lot of that same hotel, and then he went to the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce to give a speech at their breakfast. From there, the party made a quick flight to Dallas Love Field Airport. The final stop of that trip was supposed to be Austin. At the Dallas airport, the president and the first lady shook hands with the crowd, and then they got into an open-top Lincoln convertible. And if you've seen the videos, I mean, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This was a specially made limo with three rows of seats. So the Kennedys sat in the very back seat, and up front was the Texas governor, John Connally, and his wife. So the car left the airport and headed toward their next stop of the tour, which was the Trademark. And the route was approximately 10 miles long, due to nearly 200,000 people lined up around this route to catch a glimpse of JFK and Jackie as the route had been published in the newspaper. This is like, you know, today this would never happen. Secret Service would not allow there to be an open car.
Yeah.
And they would not publish the exact route in a newspaper in the days leading up to this.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I guess they did that so people, he was trying to get positive publicity. He wanted people to welcome him. So this was an effort in that vein. A few years ago, we had Michelle Obama, who I think she was no longer the first lady at the time she did. She came and spoke at a commencement ceremony at a local university here from us. And I remember they scoped things out for weeks. They're looking at building tops. Like, I'm pretty sure there were like snipers in place just in case. Like, they go all out. But at this time,
yeah,
they had the Secret Service surrounding the car, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't remember the Michelle Obama coming to town. I do remember just a few years ago, Donald Trump went to another university close by, and it was released, and people made their way. It was an intense, yeah. And like you said, Secret Service stayed low key in the area for weeks trying to just scope it out.
Yeah. It's an intense, process. And a lot of that is due to how JFK was killed. The motorcade started driving through Dealey Plaza on the edge of downtown Dallas when they turned southwest on Elm Street. And you can watch this video. People are going to call out, oh, well, look where this Secret Service person's standing. He must know something's going to happen. Or watch the car slow down so the shot can be made. Like, people pick this thing absolutely apart. But at 12:30 p.m., shots rang out. President John F. Kennedy was hit. The governor, Governor Conley, was struck by a bullet as well. There are videos you can watch on this. Probably the most famous one was the Zapruder film, who was somebody who happened to be there just taking a video himself. It's obviously hard to watch this happen. And like I said, people will pick all these videos of art, but it's fascinating to kind of watch the reactions of everybody inside. You see Kennedy throw his hands up to kind of protect his neck when he gets shot. You see Jackie kind of fall back onto the trunk. And if you look closely, you can see her picking up pieces of JFK's skull and brain matter off of the trunk. She was trying to help her husband, and the Secret Service diving in, and then all of the cars just taking off immediately. And they went straight to Parkland Memorial Hospital, where President Kennedy was taken directly into the operating room. Upon arrival, like I said, there were parts of his brain missing. They pretty much knew there was nothing they could do, but they still tried for about a half hour before stopping their operations and saying there was nothing that they could do. The president was officially declared dead at 1 p.m. And again, he was shot around 12:30. So this is all happening so fast. And this was after a priest was brought in to give him his last rites, which is a common Catholic tradition. The story is that he died before the last rites, but they put the time of death after they were administered, mostly just to make Jackie feel better, give her some peace of mind that maybe he had the last rites while his soul was still with his body. JFK was the youngest American president at just 46 years old, and he had already been through a lot. The Kennedy family really is the closest thing we've ever had in America to royalty. A prominent business family, John's older brother Joe was a war hero who ultimately died as a pilot in World War II. JFK himself had several illnesses and back operations that almost killed him. He had actually had his last rites read on multiple occasions because they thought he was going to die. And just 3 months before this assassination, the infant child of JFK and Jackie passed away. His name was Patrick. So they were still mourning the loss of a child. In the years leading up to this incident, JFK had been unfaithful to his wife. They were still working through those issues, and most people believe they were at a point where their marriage was back on the right track, ready to move forward. I think we like to think of our leaders as invincible, especially when they're always surrounded by security. But looking back at the life of JFK, at just 46 years old, he had been through so much, and I think that just shows us kind of the human vulnerability of those, even at the highest level of leadership.
Lyndon Johnson was sworn in as president on Air Force One. And in the pictures of this and the video, you can see Jackie Kennedy right at his side. And this was somewhat of a controversial decision, but Johnson said that he wanted to ensure that the American people or to the American people that there was continuity of leadership. And you can see Jackie, she's still wearing her pink Chanel suit, and it is stained with blood from John F. Kennedy. And she was asked if she wanted to change clothes, and she said, let them see what they've done. And just reading that gives me chills. Like she knew the gravity of the moment. As the world learned about the death of the American president, authorities had to start their hunt for who was responsible. At the scene, there were bullet casings found near a window on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository that's overlooking the plaza and the grassy knoll where Kennedy had been shot. I've been in that room, and it's interesting. You can see they have like a display of what that room looked like when police finally made it up there. There was a rifle that was discovered on that floor.
Question for you. Is the whole building kind of sectioned off as a historical landmark?
Yeah, that it's
you
can a museum.
So there's no, it's not a building where people work anymore.
Right. It's a museum.
Interesting. And, I didn't know that.
But the room where the alleged window is where he was shot is set up to look like it would have been that day. So it's
fascinating. Yeah.
So when the employees of the building were asked who's missing, there were just two names. One man had stepped outside to watch the parade from the street, and the other was somebody you may remember as Lee Harvey Oswald. That is the man who we have, you know, arrested for the murder, spoiler alert. But Oswald had been working there for only a month the day that the shooting took place. He had been seen on the sixth floor about a half an hour before this event, and he was spotted in the building just after the shooting by the superintendent and a police officer. Law enforcement immediately circulated a description of Oswald.
Yeah, and obviously for some reason we give assassins the luxury of calling them by all three names. Not sure why we do that, but Lee Harvey Oswald is one of the most notorious. And you can find claims online and interviews with so many people that worked in that building. And there are some who say that they saw Oswald eating a sandwich at the time of the shooting, or that he had disappeared, or they saw him sprinting out in a full sweat. Like, there are so many different conflicting stories about what people saw inside. At the time, he was on his way back to his boarding house where he had been staying. He'd been staying there for a while, and he was separated from his wife, and they were trying to work on things. And that day, he went back to his boarding house, stayed for about 15 minutes, and then he walked outside, and he was confronted by Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit. There were witnesses nearby who said that they saw this happen. Tippit thought that Oswald matched the description of the man that they were looking for from the school book depository. At this time, in the confrontation, Oswald allegedly pulled out a gun and shot Tippit with a .38 revolver. Another incident that we could spend a whole episode on if we wanted to, with the witnesses nearby, the gun itself, and then the ultimate arrest of Lee Harvey Oswald in the Texas theater. And he was arrested right around 1:45 p.m. So we're looking at just over an hour after this assassination. They believe they've identified the shooter, tracked him down. He killed a police officer and went to the movies and was arrested.
All right. I'm going to just process a little bit with you, because did we have any evidence? Like, did anybody see him shoot? I mean, I know that I said they asked people in the building who's missing right now, and they said there's two people, and one of them is Lee Harvey Oswald. But did anybody see him, like, running away from the building? Like, what?
It depends on who you talk to. There are some people who say they saw him leaving. There are other people. And at the time, I think what they knew was this is an individual who was present and is no longer. We at least need to check him out. And then when Tippit called in that he found him and Tippit got shot, then they think, well, this must be our guy.
And that makes sense.
I assume they're looking in a lot of different directions still at this time, until he's arrested, would be my understanding of kind of where they were in the investigation and in the reaction. I don't think it was somebody came and said, I think Oswald did it. I think they were looking for him to question him, and then he kind of identified himself as the shooter by killing Tippit.
Yeah. He was shot with a rifle, and I have a very similar rifle to the one that was used, and it's not something you just sneak in. It's not a pistol that you can just conceal. I mean, this would have been in a bag of some kind, like an oddly shaped bag. You know what I mean? Like, I just wonder, did he sneak it in that day? Did he have it there in the month leading up to this hidden somewhere?
There were people that say that they either gave him a ride and saw him carrying, or saw him walking in with a bag that he claimed, I think, was carrying like curtain rods or something. So,
yeah. I mean, this would be a long,
yeah, it's a very long rifle,
3 to 4 foot long rifle. So yeah. It's oddly shaped. You would notice something up.
Depending on who you talk to, some people say he did carry in something long and narrow in a bag.
So as this all unfolded, the newly sworn in president, Johnson, was nervous that this was just the first step of what could be a larger attack. So he took the entire party, including Kennedy's body, back to D.C. at 2:38 p.m.
There are things we don't think about here, like the plane itself. They weren't supposed to take off at this time. The plane had not been running. The air conditioning hadn't been on. It was over 100 degrees when they got back on this plane. This is where President Johnson was sworn in. And they had to take seats out of the plane to fit the casket because they didn't normally have room for a casket.
Can we just talk about that? Like it's already in a casket? That's like, this is happening at light speed.
Yeah, it is. Like, we're talking 2:30 here. And as soon as he passed away at the hospital, there was a big argument with the Secret Service and local law enforcement, because Texas law says if somebody's killed in Texas, we do the autopsy. So the Secret Service said, no, we are taking him back to Washington. And they were able to obtain a casket locally and put his body in it. And Secret Service just essentially pushed past local law enforcement trying to keep them in Dallas and took it onto the plane. They actually had to take the handles off of the casket because it wouldn't fit in the door of the plane.
It's so interesting just how quickly in that time, you know, things were able to happen.
It had to feel like it all happened in 1 second for the people involved. A blur. Know,
this is going to be weird. Just go with me here. But when I had my car accident, the wrecker service, like, I didn't call the wrecker service. So the wrecker service was listening to police scanners, heard that there was a wreck, and they beat the ambulance to the scene. And they took my car without even asking me if they could take it. And I feel like, I mean, somebody found out about this at the funeral home, and they were like, get a casket to the hospital now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how many other funeral homes would have wanted to be the ones to provide that service to an American president? So yeah. It's just interesting.
Yeah, it was, the whole thing's fascinating. The decisions that were being made by the Secret Service, by Jackie, by the doctors. It's just so many moving parts and happening so, so fast.
So Oswald was questioned by both law enforcement and the media. The press was just all over this, and he firmly maintained his innocence.
Man, if this happened today, there's no way the media is getting to him. Like, he's going to be locked in a box and nobody's getting to him. It's so different.
Well, if you're not familiar with this part of the story, just buckle up. Now, he's on record saying that he was just a patsy. What is a patsy? We don't use that term anymore.
Patsy, a fall guy. He's been framed that he's just being the one set up to look like the shooter by a bigger conspiracy, really. He's saying that I didn't do it. I'm being framed.
Yep. So he requested an attorney, and he was held for 2 days and two nights. And on November 24th, Lee Harvey Oswald was being transferred from Dallas City Hall, where the jail and the police headquarters were, and he was being transported to a county jail. Now, this transfer was being broadcast on live television. And on this broadcast, you see a man named Jack Ruby, and we'll talk more about him later, but he entered the basement parking garage of City Hall. And with cameras rolling, Ruby approached Oswald and shot him in the stomach at point blank range. Again, this is on live television. You can watch this clip on YouTube or wherever you find your clips.
So this individual that they think is an international assassin, potentially hired by the government of another country, and you just let this guy roll up right up to him and shoot him in the gut, like the whole thing. And people will use that to argue about their specific theories as well of why didn't police stop him. But yeah, again, something that happens so fast.
Well, in the video, you can see it's not just police and then this guy just walks up. Like, there's two lines of people. There's a crowd that is watching this. So Oswald rushed to a hospital, the same Parkland hospital where Kennedy had died just 2 days earlier. Oswald was just 24 years old. Ruby later said that he did it to spare Jackie Kennedy from having to come back to Dallas for a trial. Ruby was tried and found guilty of murder, and was sentenced to death in 1964. In 1966, a Texas appeals court reversed the conviction, but Ruby died in 1967 of a pulmonary embolism before another trial could be held. And for those that believe that he was part of a conspiracy, which we will talk about on our next episode, his death was very convenient.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the mafia and his ties to that at that point as well. But this whole thing, so we've gone from the president having a happy tour of Texas, and within 48 hours, he's killed, his alleged assassin's killed, and that person's in jail, and the whole country is left reeling. And we're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll break down what happened after President Kennedy left Dallas that day.
Oh, hey there. You like true crime stories, right? Yeah, I know. Who doesn't? But I gotta admit, after a while, all those stories of murder and heartache, well, they tend to go straight to my hips. So that's why I, Leroy Luna, have created a podcast called Excuse Me, That's Illegal, where we'll take a hardcore look at some softcore crimes. No TED Talks on Bundy here. The letters BTK won't be coming from these lips. Unless he had a brother that used to steal library books. Suppose I'd be willing to go balls deep into that one if that were the case. Anyways, you'll hear stories such as the Mad Pooper, a female jogger who wreaked havoc in a Colorado Springs neighborhood, using one family's front yard as her own personal dumping grounds. If this kind of content sounds like it's up your alley, Excuse Me, That's Illegal is available right now on all your favorite podcatchers. So come join me.
I'll be right here waiting for you.
President Johnson, after the plane had taken off from Dallas, which included Johnson and the entire Kennedy party, including Jackie and the body of then-dead President JFK, headed back to Washington, D.C., and of course, he's been sworn in as president, and he has to wonder, what's next? Is this part of a terrorist attack? Is this part of a larger conspiracy on our country? Am I going to be the next target? Is there going to be another target? And which country may have been behind this? Like I said, there was a big tension between America and the Soviet Union, as well as Cuba, which some people viewed as kind of an extension of the Soviet Union. Basically, it was the middle of the Cold War. We're all really afraid of communism at this time. And we'll get into more of the Cuba issues in a little bit here. But President Johnson's having to figure out what's going on. Jackie would claim that she thought that he was being murdered for his liberal agenda and his civil rights activism as a president. And she thought in her head that him being martyred for that cause was worthy. And when she found out they had arrested an alleged communist for it, she wept and said, oh, it was just a communist. So she kind of dismissed that as not as good of a mission to be murdered for. On November 29th, just a week after he was killed, President Johnson created the President's Commission on the Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Johnson named the head of the commission Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, which gives us the name of the Warren Report, was the official government document with the evaluation of what happened to President Kennedy and who all was involved. So they were tasked to gather, evaluate, and report on all evidence that they found relating to Lee Harvey Oswald and the death of John F. Kennedy. After 10 months of investigation, they released an 888-page report, again called the Warren Report. They cited lengthy FBI reports, interviewed eyewitnesses, expert testimony, whether it was of the medical side of things, of videos that they found of the crime scene, Kennedy's autopsy reports, physical evidence, and there were other videos that had been taken at the time by Orville Nix and Mary Muchmore and, of course, Zapruder. And then they did a lot of reenactments, and you can see those, like John said, anywhere you want to go, you're going to find a lot of videos on this. The conclusion that the Warren Report came to was that Lee Harvey Oswald murdered the president and acted alone. They determined that neither Oswald or Jack Ruby were part of a domestic conspiracy or that they were working for a foreign government that was involved in this assassination.
The report went on to describe Oswald as a former Marine who had been a skilled marksman. They claimed that Oswald fired three shots, one that entered the back of Kennedy's neck, that exited his throat, and went on to hit Connally, one that hit Kennedy in the back of the head, which would have been the fatal shot, and then one that missed. They did not establish a motive for why Oswald would want to shoot and kill President Kennedy. To this day, many people disagree with the findings of the Warren Report. In 1979, the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations conducted another investigation into the assassination. They concluded the Warren Report and the FBI investigation were seriously flawed. They determined that there were at least four shots that were fired and a high probability that there were at least two gunmen. Now, they ultimately stated that the Warren Commission failed to investigate adequately the possibility of a conspiracy to assassinate the president. In 1992, Congress passed the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992, and this required the National Archives to release all assassination-related documents to the public by October of 2017. Have you taken your time to sift through those documents?
Well, they weren't all released at that time. They were, there was intervention to prevent that from happening. And I get wanting to know what happened, but 1992 was nearly 30 years after this assassination. And I don't know, is that the best use of our government time at that time?
And in 1992, they set the date of 2017.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, 25 That's, years from then, which is super arbitrary.
Like, why not just go ahead and release it in 1993?
Yeah, I think that's Gulf War time, right? So, like, we're busy. Let's handle what's going on now. But that's what they did. So,
is it too early to speculate? I mean, I'm dying here. Like, I just want to talk about the possibility of a lone gunman.
Yeah, let's wait. There's more to get to here. So this act also created the Assassination Records Review Board to review all records for completeness and continued secrecy. From 94 to 98, the review board gathered and unsealed about 60,000 documents, which made up about 4 million pages of investigation. All remaining assassination-related records were scheduled to be released again by October of 2017, with the exception of documents certified for continued postponement by succeeding presidents due to identifiable harm to the military, defense, intelligence operations, law enforcement, or conduct of foreign relations of such gravity that it outweighs the public interest for disclosure. So basically they're saying, we're going to release all this in October of 2017 unless a president stops it because they're afraid that it's going to cause more damage than it's worth. Trump, when he was elected, promised not to block the release of the documents as he was the president during 2017. But in April of 2018, he did block the release of some of the records, and he postponed it until October of 2021. Again, it's like we're just throwing darts at a calendar here to pick these dates. President Biden, when he was elected, cited the coronavirus pandemic to delay the release of these documents even more. But he did eventually release 13,713 unredacted documents in 2022. A second group of documents were unsealed in June of 2023, and at this point, 99% of all documents that are available from the investigation into this assassination have been made public. But do we still know what happened?
And do we really know that 99% of the records have been released?
That's a great question.
I mean, like, who's keeping track of that? And yeah. How can we rely on its accuracy?
The people keeping track of that are the ones that are in charge of not releasing it. So very big conflict of interest there.
So let's dive into some of the things that just don't make sense. And then we'll talk about conspiracies probably next week. Right, Jamie?
Yes.
So when the Warren Report first came out, CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite said the following: although the Warren Commission had full power to conduct its own independent investigation, it permitted the FBI and the CIA to investigate themselves and so cast out a permanent shadow on the answers. That's a pretty powerful statement. First, there were discrepancies regarding what the body looked like in Dallas and then how it looked once it arrived in Washington, D.C. A 1998 staff report for the Assassinations Records Review Board claimed that the brain photographs in the Kennedy records may not be John F. Kennedy's brain. So the photographs in the record allegedly show much less damage than what Kennedy had sustained. These photos also did not show a large wound in the back of Kennedy's head, even though many eyewitnesses and the medical team at Parkland Hospital all said that President lost a large portion of his head in the shooting. I don't want to be graphic, man, but I mean, I've watched this video over and over again. It's brutal to say, man, but this rifle, this caliber weapon would leave a really small entrance wound, but then the exit wound would be the size of like a grapefruit.
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy lost the majority of the back of his head.
To be clear, the depository was behind him.
And, well, next week, conspiracies. Yes. And, gosh, I don't even know what I was going to say.
Yeah, his wife was picking up pieces of his brain. Pieces of your brain don't fall out unless there's a big hole.
One time, I grew up on a farm, and I have, like I said, pretty much the same exact rifle. I put a pop can on a fence post one time, and I tried to hit it. I missed. It looked like I hit it because the pop can flew up in the air, did a bunch of flips, and then landed. When I went to pick it up, the pop can was fine, but I looked at the fence post. There's an entry wound on the fence post smaller than my pinky finger. The back of the fence post is gone. I mean, it just completely blew it up. If he had been shot with a rifle like this, his head would have been missing. And based on every video I've seen, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so there's a big discrepancy there. And then the next fishy part was that the Warren Report talked constantly about the 3 spent cartridges that were found near the open window in the 6th floor of the book depository. So they concluded that there were only 3 shots that had been fired. However, there are many witnesses, the majority of witnesses, in fact, believe that more shots, 4 to be exact, were shot. And the committee of 1979 concluded that as well. If you look at the Zapruder film, you can see how long it takes for that particular rifle to fire, to put the next cartridge in the chamber and to fire again. But there's not that much time between 2 of the shots.
Can I just talk more about guns? I know this is weird.
That's what we're doing.
So this is, you got to keep in mind, this is not like an assault rifle. This is not an AR-15 that you can just pull the trigger, boom, 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 boom.
It's not automatic, like not semi-automatic.
This is a bolt action rifle. That means that you put a round in the chamber, you push the bolt in and down, pull the trigger. Nothing happens after that. You have to release the bolt, pull it back. That ejects the cartridge. You push it back down and then make the bolt go down again. That reloads it. This, I mean, you can do it quickly, but it is not going to be anything close to like a semi-automatic.
Which is what it looks like when you watch the film. 2 shots happen really quickly together.
And then to make those actions and then re-aim, because you're not going to keep the gun precisely still. So it's going to take, I mean, my best estimate would say 3 to 5 seconds between shots. And that's if you're an extremely talented individual.
The answer for this is what the Warren Commission came up with. And that's the single bullet theory, or the magic bullet theory. This is particularly attributed to Congressman Arlen Specter. And they're trying to figure out what happened to this bullet that allegedly struck Kennedy in the back. And this is what they concluded. So Governor Connally was sitting in front of Kennedy, and they determined the same bullet must have hit them both. They believe that that bullet struck Kennedy from behind, traveled up into the side and to exit through his throat, then went into the body of Governor Connally in the shoulder, exited through his chest, shattered his wrist, and then landed in his thigh.
So it looks like he'd been shot twice, but it was the same bullet.
That's the theory. Well, this one bullet shot 2 people, one of them twice.
Right.
So you're looking at a ping pong situation, and bullets do weird things when they get inside your body.
And that sounds ridiculous, but it is definitely possible.
Now, this bullet was later found on just laying on the gurney that Governor Conley was on at the hospital. So that totals up to 7 wounds, both entry and exit, in the 2 men with 1 bullet. The commission acknowledged that there's a difference of opinion among members of their team about this theory, but that this theory wasn't essential to the end conclusion that all the shots came from Oswalt from the book depository and there were only 3 shots fired. But it does cast a lot of doubt about the credibility of the report if they're attributing this to a bullet that just does magical things.
So let's go back to the conclusion that all the bullets came from the same window. They said that based on this conclusion of evidence and of eyewitnesses, experts, medical authorities, on-site testing and analysis of the 3 films taken that day, in 1979, the HSCA published a report from a critic of the Warren Commission named Robert Gordon. Gordon claimed that he knew of nearly 2 dozen suspected places where a gunman could have been firing at the president that day, including multiple locations in or on the Texas School Book Depository, the Dow Tax building, the Dallas County Records building, the overpass, a storm drain, and the grassy knoll itself. And I'm sure that you've heard of the grassy knoll. You've heard me talk about it. It's a very famous place. Some researchers say the grassy knoll was identified by most eyewitnesses as the area from where the shots were fired. And this would be ground level. This is like a little strip of grass in downtown Dallas. Very interesting to go there. In March of 1965, one researcher wrote that there were 121 witnesses to the assassination listed in the Warren report. 51 people said the shots came from the grassy knoll. 32 said that they came from the Texas School Book Depository. In 1967, another researcher looked at the stories of 64 witnesses and concluded 33 of them thought the shots came from the grassy knoll. So basically, we have a lot of eyewitness reports saying that there were shots from the grassy knoll and shots from the book depository.
Right. And depending on which report you read, there are so many varying opinions of what actually happened that day. The big questions are how many shots were fired, where were they fired from, and once you answer those 2 questions, that can help you better understand what mechanism put those shooters in place. If it was one shooter with 3 bullets, you can convince yourself that maybe it was Lee Harvey Oswald. But if it was more shots or from a different direction, it's something much bigger. And that's what we're going to talk about next week, is the conspiracies or the theories surrounding the assassination of President Kennedy, all the players that were involved, and then we'll talk about where you and I land on those.
I'm excited. I have so many thoughts swirling through my head right now.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I can't wait. And then on an upcoming Patreon episode, we're going to bring our writer Mackenzie on for some of her takes and some other medical analysis that she has learned about during the course of her research on this.
I'm excited. Guys, we appreciate you. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.